David Zinner, David Titus. David has been a Level 2 support analyst for Webster Application Server since October 2001. He works directly with clients to resolve technical problems and specializes in several components, including the transaction service. He is an IBM certified system administrator for Webster Application Server, version 5.0, version 6.0, and version 6.1. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from the Pennsylvania State University. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to David.
Thanks, Elijah. I guess you can start off on slide number 2. So today I'm going to be talking about transactions in Webster Application Server, and I've broken the presentation down into 3 areas. We're going to start with a general overview of transactions and concepts that will kind of get everybody on the same page as far as what we mean by transactions and some of the basic concepts, since some people are probably coming into this presentation with different levels of knowledge and experience. Then we're going to go into specifically what is supported with transactions in Webster Application Server, including some program model extensions and features that not everybody is aware of. And then finally, I think that the real benefit will be the discussion of common problems that occur with transactions and how to troubleshoot and resolve them. So you can go to slide 3. So we're going to talk about the overview of transactions and concepts. Slide 4. All right. So when we're talking about a transaction, it's a very simple concept, really. It's just something that groups pieces of work together that should be atomic, meaning that either everything succeeds or everything fails. So if everything is successful, the transaction will commit. If any piece of the transaction fails, then the entire transaction rolls back. A classic example is with a bank where money is being taken out of one account and put into another account. You don't want either one of those to fail and have the other part still work. Otherwise, you know, somebody's going to be either really happy or really upset. So basically, a transaction ties these pieces of work together and ensures that either everything succeeds or everything fails. There are 2 types of transactions. The simplest is called the resource manager local transaction, or you could just call it a local transaction. That means that there is only one resource manager involved in the transaction. By resource manager, what I mean is either a relational database, which are accessed in WebSphere by a JDBC data source, a messaging system such as WebSphere MQ that's accessed with JMS, or an enterprise information system that you have a J2C resource adapter to connect to. Another type of transaction would be a global transaction where multiple resources are involved, meaning that you need an external transaction manager to coordinate the transaction and make sure that it coordinates the commit or the rollback on the multiple resource managers. And the external transaction manager that we're going to be talking about today is WebSphere Application Server. If you see in the slide, there's some funky characters at the bottom. That should just say WebSphere. We looked over the presentation before the meeting, and it looks like that's the only problem that we're going to see. But that should say WebSphere. So WebSphere is needed to coordinate multiple resources in global transactions. You can have a resource manager local transaction without an external transaction manager. On to slide 5. Okay, so the transaction service in WebSphere Application Server, what does that actually provide to you? It provides the following things. First, a callable interface to manage transactional work. We're going to talk in a little bit about the user transaction interface. It allows applications to start and manage and decide to either commit or roll back their own global transactions. Like I said before, it coordinates global transactions that involve multiple resource managers. And it supports automatic propagation of a transaction context with remote requests to other servers. What that means is if you have an application running in one app server and it calls an enterprise Java Beam on another application server, that transaction context can be propagated to the remote application server to ensure that all of the work either succeeds or fails, even with the remote call. And it coordinates the transaction completion with other servers. It doesn't even just have to be WebSphere. It can be other J2EE application servers. And finally, it ensures recovery after a server failure. So if a server goes down suddenly while a transaction is in flight, WebSphere will recover the transaction, or at least make an effort to, when the server comes back up. And we're going to talk about that also in more detail later in the presentation. Slide 6. So slide 6 talks about two common Java APIs that you hear a lot about that are implemented in WebSphere Application Server, JTS and JTA. The difference between the two, JTS is Java Transaction Service. It's the Java implementation of the CORBA Object Transaction Service, or OTS. And it's basically the piece that I talked about as the transaction service that's responsible for coordination and propagation of transactions between J2EE servers. Then we have the JTA, Java Transaction API. That's an API that serves as a J2EE interface to the JTS. It's responsible for transaction boundary demarcation, which would be the begin, the commit, the rollback, and enlistment of resources through the XA interface. And WebSphere Application Server implements both of these. Slide 7. Slide 7 talks more about the JTA. There are three interfaces that are part of the JTA, only one of which, as an application programmer, you would need to worry much about. The first two are Transaction Manager and Transaction. Those interfaces are only used internally by the application server. For example, the EJB container with container managed transactions. The user transaction interface is what's used by the application code to manage transactions. So an application that wanted to start a global transaction would do a JNDI lookup of the user transaction interface using Java colon comp slash user transaction. And the methods that are available include begin, commit, rollback, get status, set rollback only, which would be called when you wanted to roll back the transaction, and set transaction timeout. So you can specify a timeout for the transaction. And you can see Java doc at the URL that's provided there. It looks like that full URL is kind of chopped off. So if anybody has a question about, you know, that full URL, they can raise a question at the end and I can provide the full URL there. The next slide. Okay. The next slide is XA and two-phase commit. So as I mentioned before, global transactions involve multiple resources. For example, a transaction could involve two databases. You get some information out of one database and put that information into a second database. It could involve a database and a messaging system like MQ or a variety of combinations. Have that supported, the resource manager must support two-phase commit, which basically means that the commit of the transaction is done in multiple phases so that it's done on all of the resource managers that are involved in the transaction. The resource manager supports two-phase commit through the XA resource interface. In WebSphere Application Server, it's very easy to create an XA-capable resource in the data source or the connection factory in the administrative console. You can select to enable XA. With the connection factory, there's just a checkbox for data sources. It's just a matter of selecting the XA implementation class name when you configure the JDBC provider, and that's all done through a wizard in version 6.0 and 6.1. You cannot enlist a one-phase capable resource in a transaction with other resources unless you have last participant support enabled, which is a program model extension that I'm going to get into later. But as a general rule, if you don't have that enabled, if you try to enlist a one-phase capable resource in a global transaction that has other resources enlisted, you'll get an error similar to the one that you see here, an illegal attempt to use multiple resources that only have one-phase capability has occurred within a global transaction. You would be amazed at how many PMRs we've seen in support with that particular problem. Next slide. Now we're going to go on to part two, transaction support in WebSphere Application Server. And now that we've gone over, you know, the basic concepts behind transactions, how does that relate specifically to WebSphere Application Server? Go to slide 10. So I'm going to start with talking about Enterprise Java Beans, or EJBs. With EJBs, there are two types of transactions that you can decide to use: bean-managed transactions and container-managed transactions. Bean-managed transactions are only available with session beans, not with entity beans, and the application would manage its own transactions using the user transaction API that I just talked about. On the other hand, with container-managed transactions, the transactions are managed by the EJB container itself, and you can use the container-managed transactions with session beans, and they must be used with entity beans. You select whether you want to use container-managed or bean-managed transactions in the EJB deployment descriptor, the ejbjar.xml, and if you use container-managed transactions, all of the transactional work, the begin, the commit, the rollback, etc., is transparent to the application. The application doesn't need to call any transaction APIs. It's all handled by the application server. And as a result, it's easier to implement. And in general, there's performance benefits to using container-managed transactions. Next slide. So more about container-managed transactions. With container-managed transactions, you set a transaction attribute on the bean or on a bean method. You can, you know, a bean would, if you set it on the bean, it would globally apply to every method on the bean, or you can, you know, set a different transaction attribute on different methods if you want to. And you do that using the tooling such as WSAD, RAD, or the Application Server Toolkit. The change goes into the ejbjar.xml deployment descriptor. And the transaction attributes define how the EJB container manages the transaction when a particular EJB method is invoked. So as an example, now, I'm not going to go through all of the attributes, but there's a common transaction attribute is required, meaning that the EJB method needs to be invoked from a client that is within a transaction context, and then that transaction context gets propagated to the EJB method that's called. There's also not supported, which means that the method is called with no transaction context. And so then you would basically be in a non-global transaction situation unless the EJB method use the user transaction API to start its own global transaction. There are a number of different transaction attributes. The descriptions are listed in the information center. Again, that URL is cut off, but it's there. The user transaction cannot be used in a container-managed transaction. So if the transaction is managed by the container, you cannot start a user transaction within it. You'll get an exception if you try to do that. That next slide. All right. That was EJBs. Now, how about servlets? In servlets, there is no concept of a container-managed transaction. If a servlet application needs to start a global transaction, it needs to use the user transaction interface. The transaction context can then be propagated from a servlet, but the transaction must be completed before the servlet service method is exited. And if without a global transaction, a local transaction containment is started. And I'll be talking about that on slide 13. You can change it. Local transaction containment is commonly abbreviated LTC, and that is implemented by WebSphere Application Server for any cases where there is not a global transaction defined. Whether you're in a servlet or an EJV, if there's no global transaction, then a local transaction containment is started automatically. It can only involve a single resource manager, so there's no coordination of two-phase commits like there is with a global transaction. There's no programming interface, so there's no way that an application can itself start a local transaction or do anything to manage the local transaction. It's all managed by the web and EJB containers in WebSphere Application Server. So when the EJB method or the servlet service method are entered and there's no global transaction context, WebSphere starts a local transaction containment and then automatically commits or rolls back that local transaction containment at the boundary of the method call. So when the method call is exited, that local transaction will end. Next slide, slide 14. One thing that I wanted to mention in this presentation as it relates to local transactions is the behavior with connection pooling, because that's something that in support we see quite a bit. With local transactions, they are the default when you enter a servlet, right? If you don't create a user transaction, you're going to be in a local transaction. If you use a shareable connection from the connection pool, the following behavior might occur. Now, shareable connections are also the default when you get a connection from a WebSphere connection pool. So you would have to consciously choose to use unshared connections or unshareable connections to avoid the behavior that I'm going to talk about. Shareable connections do not return to the free connection pool when the application closes them in an LTC or in a typical servlet. The connections are automatically released at the end of the LTC. That's so that if the application requests another connection, that connection can then be, that same connection can be used and shared within the LTC. The problem that occurs is if an LTC is long running, the maximum connection pool size can quickly be reached and cause the pool to run out of free connections, and then connection wait timeout exceptions occur. And you see lots of threads waiting for a free connection, which slows down the application. The solution to the problem is to use a user transaction to start a global transaction or use unshareable connections where the connections would return to the free pool when they're closed within an LTC. A lot of times we see the problem happen when a servlet will get a connection, use the connection, and then close it. But then the servlet goes off and does other work. It may even call other servlets and doesn't, the servlet service method that we originally got the connection in doesn't exit for a period of time. And then these connections are in use and don't return to the free pool until the servlet service method exits. And that causes the problem here. More information on this can be seen in the DeveloperWorks article that I included the link to here. Unfortunately, that URL is also cut off. Again, if anybody requests it, maybe what we can do is put together a list of all the links that were in this presentation and give the full links so that people have it after the presentation ends. But anyway, there's more information about this in that DeveloperWorks article that's mentioned. Slide 15. The program model extensions. In WebSphere Application Server Enterprise Edition 5.0 and then WBI Server Foundation version 5.1, which replaced Enterprise Edition 5.0, we introduced several program model extensions to the J2EE programming model that were then incorporated into the base versions of WebSphere Application Server version 6.0 and 6.1. There's a lot of different program model extensions, but three that particularly relate to transactions, and those are last participant support, extended JTA support, and activity sessions. And basically, these are available to anybody who's running version 6.0 or version 6.1. The next slide, slide 16. Last participant support, I touched on earlier, it allows you to have one single phase, non-XA capable resource enlisted with one or more two-phase capable resources in a global transaction. The important note is that it's just one single non-XA resource. So if you have two, you still can't enlist two one-phase resources in a global transaction. Last participant support has to be explicitly enabled on the application through the tooling in WSAD, RAD, or the AST. And again, that entry to enable last participant support goes into the application deployment descriptor. The last participant support in WebSphere then coordinates the commit or the rollback of the two-phase resources and then the one-phase resource. Next slide, slide 17. The next program model extension is extended JTA support. This support provides additional APIs beyond the user transaction interface. Similar to user transaction, you access it by doing a JNDI lookup of the extended JTA transaction, and there are several methods that you can then call. You can access the local and global transaction IDs associated with the thread with these get local ID and get global ID methods. And you can register a transaction synchronization callback to be notified of a transaction completion using the register synchronization callback and unregister synchronization callback methods. And these can be used within all J2EE application modules. Next slide, 18. Activity sessions are the third program model extension that I wanted to talk about. These are similar to transactions, but they're basically an alternative to using a global transaction. It's an alternative unit of work scope. You can coordinate multiple local transactions whose outcomes are independent. And these can be used in place of or in addition to global transactions. They can encapsulate global transactions, but a global transaction cannot encapsulate an activity session. That's because with an activity session, all of the units of work are independent. And it basically provides a session context without coordinating any two-phase commit among the resources. So you want to track all of these local transaction outcomes, but you don't want them to be dependent on one another. So the outcome of one global transaction, even if that, of one local transaction, even if that fails, will not cause the other local transactions to roll back. This is available, again, in all J2EE modules, web modules, EJB modules, and application client modules. Work is either checkpointed or reset to the last point of consistency instead of committed or rolled back. So if the local transaction was successful, the work would be checkpointed. If it was not, it would be reset, and then that local transaction operation could be tried again. And EJBs can use container-managed or vManaged activity sessions with the same transaction attributes that you could use for a global transaction. You can use that with activity sessions. For vManaged activity sessions, the application does a JNDI lookup of the user activity session as opposed to the user transaction. Next slide. 19. Another important feature that's relatively new is Web Services Atomic Transaction Support, or WSAT for short. It's based on the WS Atomic Transaction Specification. The WS Atomic Transaction is configured in the deployment descriptors, not programmatically, so there's nothing similar to the user transaction for this. It must be a JSR 109 web service client because only those clients have access to the deployment descriptors. And basically, if a web service is requested within a global transaction, then the transaction context is propagated to the remote server that hosts the web service. It's intended for transactions that are of a short duration, and there's a restriction that it cannot be used with a firewall, and it's not recommended for use across enterprises. So typically this would only be if an application running in WebSphere was calling a web service, you know, that was in your own enterprise, not something from a business partner or another company. Next slide. Okay, transaction timeout configuration in the administrative console. You can configure multiple timeouts under the transaction service in the administrative console. The most common is the total transaction lifetime timeout, which has a default of 120 seconds or 2 minutes. That's quite simply the maximum lifetime of the transaction that started on that application server. It can be overridden programmatically if the program calls set transaction timeout or in the application deployment descriptor. And if this timeout expires without the transaction having been committed or rolled back, then the transaction would be rolled back when the timeout is reached. And that occurs when control returns to the container. So if the timeout occurs when the application is making some remote call, the transaction wouldn't roll back until that remote call returned. So you don't always see the rollback immediately after the timeout. Also, the client inactivity timeout is for the time between transactional requests from a remote client. So if your application has imported a transaction context from a client, this is the amount of time that the transaction can run without any requests from the client before it would time out on the server side. And the maximum transaction timeout then is the maximum lifetime of transactions that are imported from remote clients. And again, when any of these expire, the transaction would roll back. Slide 21. Tracing. Now, I'm going to get into the troubleshooting after the tracing, but I wanted to mention some things about the tracing here because this is configured in the application server. You see the different trace specifications for tracing transaction problems listed here for different versions of the application server, and also some additional traces for other components that are normally needed for transaction-related problems. The important thing that I wanted to stress on this slide is that it's very important to increase the default maximum file size and maximum number of historical files when you're enabling a transaction trace so that the trace captures the entire life cycle of the transaction. As I mentioned, the default transaction timeout is 120 seconds. So if you only have a trace that captures 20 or 30 seconds, then that's not going to be enough to show what happened within the entire transaction. So in particular, when we're talking about transaction-related problems, it's important to make sure that we have enough historical trace data saved. Next slide, 22. Okay. Now that we have that understanding, I'm going to get into some common problems that occur with transactions and steps on how to troubleshoot them. Next slide, 23. All right, first, transaction rollbacks. Very common type of problem that we see in support. Typically, you'll see a transaction rollback exception or a CSI transaction rollback exception in the logs. The meaning of it is basically that a transaction has rolled back. So then if you're an administrator and you see this in the logs, you want to know, well, what caused the transaction to roll back? Common causes are either that an exception occurred, and that could be either an application exception, an exception from a resource manager. So, for example, if there's a database involved in the transaction, you may get some SQL exception when the application tries to insert data, or an exception from WebSphere application server. The other thing that could cause that rollback would be a timeout. So if the transaction went too long and timed out, the rollback occurs. Generally, if you look at a systemout.log, you can look above the rollback and see if there were any other exceptions or transaction timeouts that occurred previously. If you don't see anything obvious, then go to the next slide, slide 24. Then the next step would be to analyze a transaction trace to determine the cause of the problem. So we talked about how to enable the trace a little while ago. Once you have the trace, this is really the type of problem that I think can be troubleshooted, without even going to IBM support most of the time, if you know what to look for. So once you have the trace, you would look for the transaction rollback exception and note the thread ID, and then you would follow that thread ID up, and so you would see the previous trace entries that occurred on that thread and look for exceptions that occurred. If you see the next bullet where I talk about an alternate approach, the thread ID is the series of characters after the timestamp. So here it's the 5015D. That's the thread ID. You can look and see what happened on that particular thread to see why the transaction rolled back. What you can also do is look for the beginning of the transaction in the trace. So follow the thread up to the beginning of the transaction and then follow down the thread until you find the cause. So it's kind of a bottom-up or a top-down approach. Either way, you should be able to find the cause of the rollback. Also, you can look for transaction timeout messages for that particular transaction. And if you see that it's timed out, then that is an obvious cause of the rollback. In the trace entry that's on this slide, you can see the transaction ID. So it says transaction begin occurred for TX colon, and that 116708 is the transaction ID. So if you do a search on the transaction ID, you'll find messages like transaction begin occurred. You may see transaction exported. So you may see that transaction was exported to a remote server. You would see, if it rolled back, and you would also see if there was a transaction timeout on that transaction. Next slide, slide 25. So then transaction timeouts in particular. When you have a transaction timeout, how do you determine the cause of it? So you would see in the system out.log log this WTRN0006W warning saying that the transaction has timed out after 120 seconds, or if you used a different transaction timeout setting on your app server, you might see a different value there. That's how you know that the transaction has timed out. And it means that the transaction did not commit or roll back within the total transaction lifetime timeout number of seconds. Next slide, 26. Okay, common causes of a transaction timing out. It could be a slow performance of that application. It's just performing slowly, and the 2 minutes go by and the transaction times out. The thread could be stuck waiting for something, or it could be hung. If the thread hangs, then the transaction will time out. The transaction timer actually runs on a different thread, so that's how it's possible for transactions to time out, even if the thread that the transaction is running on is hung. It could be waiting for something. Typically, it could be a request to a remote EJB. It could be a database query that's taking a long time. But if it's waiting for something and the call doesn't come back within 2 minutes, or maybe there's multiple calls to a database or to a remote EJB that take a long time, that could be a reason why a transaction would time out. Or there could simply be a lot of work happening, and you just need to increase the total transaction lifetime timeout so that the transactions can complete. I was working with a customer just last week that was seeing transaction timeouts, and he said he was only seeing them when he had very large EJB requests. And, we looked at traces and saw, well, it was just taking a really long time to read all of this data from the EJB, and it was, the timeouts were only happening with those very large requests. And so he doubled the total transaction lifetime timeout, and sure enough, that took care of the problem. So it could be any of those things, but the question is, how do you determine which of those things is causing the problem? And we'll see that on the next slide, slide 27. If you analyze a transaction trace, you can determine the cause of a transaction timeout. With the transaction timeouts, you need to follow multiple threads because a separate thread is used to time out the transaction. So what you would need to do is find the transaction ID for the transaction that timed out, and then locate the thread that the transaction ID was started on, and follow the thread to find the cause of the problem. You may see, typically what I look for is gaps on that thread. Look at the timestamps. You may see an execute query call to a database that you see goes out, let's say 1601 is the timestamp, and it comes back at like 1602 in 30 seconds, and then you say, hey, it took a really long time for that call to return. And by finding those gaps like that, you can usually find out what's taking a long time to complete that causes the transaction to time out. There's a detailed write-up on how to analyze a trace to resolve a transaction timeout that I wrote that's included in a DeveloperWorks article that a colleague of mine wrote a few months ago, and it's located in this DeveloperWorks article that you see the beginning of the URL for there, and it's in trace example number 2. And it shows exactly what to look for in the trace, you know, what particular lines are important when you're trying to determine the cause of a transaction timeout in a lot more detail than I could fit onto this slide. So that's a good thing to look at. I know several people have looked at it and told me that it's been really helpful. And I think that it should be a useful resource to you, too. Next slide, 28. Transaction recovery problems. That's the third type of problem that I wanted to talk about. It's another very common type of problem that we see in support. First, I want to give some background on transaction recovery so that you understand what I mean when there's a problem during transaction recovery. So anytime a transaction is started in WebSphere Application Server, data about the transaction is written to the transaction logs, which are located in the trend log directory, in the directory that you see underneath here. During a normal shutdown, WebSphere Application Server will resolve all in-flight or incomplete transactions as part of the normal shutdown process. Now, there's a problem when the application server is stopped ungracefully. So if it crashes, if somebody goes in and does a kill minus 9 on the process, or if there's simply a power outage or somebody pulls the plug on the machine, the application server just comes to a dead stop, and we don't get to gracefully resolve all of those incomplete transactions. So then what happens is when the application server starts, the transaction logs are checked for unresolved transactions. And if we find unresolved transactions, the transaction recovery is attempted so that we can commit or roll back those transactions that haven't finished yet. So especially if you're on a production server where this happens, you certainly want the transactions that were in flight when the outage occurred to complete so that you don't lose important data. And that's what the transaction recovery does. Now, next slide, 29. What could go wrong? All right, so normally transaction recovery occurs and it completes with no problems. And in that case, sometimes as an administrator, you wouldn't even notice that it occurred because you wouldn't see errors about it in the logs. Although in version 6.1, you would see a message in the log that shows how many transactions are being recovered, just for your information. However, we often see transaction recovery errors occur when an application server is started. And so that raises an alarm for the system administrator because, you know, they try to start the application server and they see all these errors. They want to know what's causing the problem. So you'll know that the problem is related to transaction recovery if you see this particular package in the stack trace of the exception, com.ibm.ws.transaction.jta.recoveryManager. Common causes of problems with recovery include the following. The backend resource might not be available. So if there's a transaction that involves a DB2 database, and that database is not up when you restart the application server, then there's no way that the transaction can complete because it can't communicate with that backend resource. There's often XA-related errors, XA exceptions that have reason codes associated with them, such as the XAER_RMERR, that one in particular would occur when a backend resource is unavailable. But these errors would come from the JDBC driver or the JMS code or possibly from a J2C resource adapter for an enterprise information system. And these XA errors that occur often are not necessarily a problem with WebSphere application server, but they indicate that something has gone wrong in the resource manager during the attempted transaction recovery. And the third thing is there could be a possible defect in WebSphere application server transaction recovery. We have seen that occur before. These are all things that could cause a problem during recovery. So next slide, slide 30. If so, how do you resolve this problem once it occurs? So there are two different ways to go about it, depending on if you're on a test system or a production system. Obviously, if this is production and you've got customer data out there that's being recovered, it's a more serious issue. On a test system, first thing to do would be to enable transaction tracing with the instructions that we saw earlier in the server.xml. Now, you may not be able to access the administrative console if the application server doesn't start, so you would need to manually enable tracing in the server.xml. And then reproduce the problem by restarting the application server to produce a trace of the problem and then send the trace to support. And then once you have a PMR open and support is looking at it, we can analyze the trace and see why the transaction recovery failed and provide a solution. And then if you're on a test system, what you can do is delete all of the files in that trend log directory and restart the application server. And then with no data in the transaction logs, there will be no transactions to recover when the application server restarts. So then, you know, you get around the problem. And if it's a test system and you didn't really care about the data in an in-flight transaction anyway, then this is the easiest way to do it. On a production system, again, you would enable the tracing in the server.xml. You would reproduce the problem by restarting the application server, and then you would send the trace to support. However, if there's, you know, data that needs to be recovered in the transaction logs, you don't want to just delete them and restart the app server. Instead, what I would recommend doing is routing traffic to other servers until the problem is resolved so that the transaction data isn't lost. And then, you know, IBM support should be able to provide a solution to get the transactions to be recovered. And once that is resolved, then the server that was having the problem would go back online and continue to handle requests. Next slide, 31. All right, so a summary of what we talked about is, you know, an overview of transactional concepts. We talked about specifically what's supported relating to transactions in WebSphere application server, and then I described some common problems and how you can resolve them. Next slide, 32. So that was all that I had. There are many additional WebSphere product resources that are out there on the web for your benefit. A couple things to highlight would be the technical exchange webcasts, not just this one, but I know that a lot of other people in IBM have produced some really good presentations and webcasts that are all archived out there for you to go through at your convenience. And the IBM Education Assistant is also a great resource. There's a lot of good educational presentations that are out there, especially on some new features that have been added to WebSphere Application Server. And it's a great way to keep abreast of those changes and new features. And then next slide, 33, question and answer time. So I'll turn it over to Elijah for that.
Hey, thank you, David, for a great presentation.
We'll go first to Laura Guazzelli with University of Florida.
Hi, I have a question about what you were talking about in slide 14, the connection pooling and the connection wait timeout exception. Could you elaborate a little more how we can pinpoint to this particular problem?
Okay, sure. So I guess you're saying if you have a connection wait timeout exception, how do you know if it's caused by the use of shareable connections with local transactions?
Right.
Okay. Well, the first thing is, I would ask, is it a servlet application? And is it a servlet application that could have long-running servlets where we're in the service method for a long period of time? If it is, then there's a very good chance that the problem is occurring because of this. To know for sure, what we would need to do is get a combination of a transaction trace and a connection pooling trace and look at the trace, and it would show us how long each connection in the pool had been in use, and it would also show us if that connection was held in a local transaction and if it was a shareable connection. So there are things that we could look for in that trace to know for sure what was causing the problem. If you're familiar with the connection leak logic tracing that's part of the connection pool trace, that specifically is what we look for in support when we look at those kinds of problems. And there are some tech notes on the IBM support website that talk about how to look at the connection leak logic information in a trace. You could go to the WebSphere application server support site and do a search for connection leak logic, and you should find a few documents on that. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great.
We'll go next to Herman Hubler with IBM.
Hello. Thanks for the presentation. I have two questions, basically. The first one would be, if I get this XAER_RMERR message in my system outlook that transaction recovery was impossible, what's the best way or how can I find out which resource manager is not available?
Okay, so if you see an XA exception like the XAER_RMERR in your log, what's the best way to determine the cause of the problem and what resource manager it is? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, actually, the question is which resource manager is not available, because especially this RM_ERR error message points to the remote resource manager, or remote resource manager is not available. So
yeah.
Which one? How can I find out which one is causing this error message?
Well, you should see a stack trace with the XA exception. And at the top of the stack trace, you'll see what code through the exception. So, like, for example, if it was DB2, at the top of the stack trace, you would see com.ibm.db2.jcc.something. So that would show that, you know, the DB2 JDBC driver was throwing the exception. And then you would know, you know, that it was a problem with the DB2 database.
Yeah, really? No, usually there's no stack trace associated with this message. It just pops up every 2 minutes in the log file until the log files are full.
If there's no stack trace, then the best thing to do is probably to enable tracing.
Yeah.
And the trace that I would enable would be the transaction tracing plus WAS.J2C, and you'll see those trace specifications in the slide that talked about enabling traces, slide 21. And you would pretty much definitely see the stack trace in that trace. You could just enable the trace, and then once you have the trace file, just do a search for the XA exception, and you should see a stack trace in there.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Sure. Second question. Global transactions always a two-phase commit transaction, right?
Yes. Although you could, I mean, you could have a global transaction, like if it was a container managed transaction, and just have one resource in the transaction.
But it requires an XA capable resource.
Right.
Okay. And if the transaction manager runs a rollback, which you said is used for rolling back transactions, just in case you have a hard stop, a kill minus 9 right crash, which you said is used here for rolling back to transactions.
I didn't catch all of that. Can you ask it again?
If the transaction manager is rolling back a transaction after a crash or a hard stop, yeah? Which,
so after a hard stop, we
which credentials are used for rolling back the transactions?
So you're saying if there's a kill minus 9 or the app server crashes and we're doing transaction recovery?
Yep.
Okay. So then if we're rolling back the transaction, what was the rest of the question?
Which credentials are used for the transaction rollback?
Oh, which credentials?
Yep.
Like the username and password?
Exactly.
There is in the version 6.1 admin console, if in the data source or connection factory configuration, there's an authentication alias that you would set that's specific to transaction recovery. I think it's called transaction recovery authentication alias or something like that. And that's the one that would get used. And I believe in earlier versions of WebShare application server, it would be the container or component managed authentication alias that's specified on the resource.
Okay, thank you very much for your answer.
No problem.
We'll move next to Sudhir Maduri with EDS.
Hi, most of our applications doesn't require a recovery of the transaction after, you know, hard reboot or RB stops.
Okay.
Presently, what we are doing is we are going inside the TranLog and just deleting those files. Now, is there a setting or a way where we can, with full confidence, say, you know, to tell WebSphere not to recover the transactions after the...
No, there's no setting for that. If you're seeing persistent problems with transaction recovery and you don't know why, I mean, if it's not something obvious like a database not being available, then you can open a PMR and we can take a look at a trace and see why it's failing. And the other thing to do would be, you know, make sure that the application servers are stopped gracefully. Because if they are, then no transaction recovery will be attempted.
Right. I mean, we have certain times where we need to bring down the servers, just a recycling of the servers.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, you know, it might be, you know, WebSphere might be trying to recover or doing some kind of in-flight transactions, which, you know, which we don't have to care.
Uh-huh.
We just need to bring down the servers. And the servers goes down okay, but when we try to bring up the servers, we see all these errors, and sometimes it's take a while, it's kind of taking a while to bring up those servers, which, if for the business point of view, they don't have to recover the transactions.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is, you know, we stop and then delete the tran logs and then restart it clean. But instead of doing that, if we have any kind of, you know, setting to tell WebSphere not to recover anything, just proceed with normal starts, certain stops.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there isn't an option right now to tell WebSphere not to recover transactions. You could open a feature request. To request that feature in future releases of WebSphere Application Server. But as of now, that feature is not available.
Okay. If I may ask quickly one more question, different area though. Is there some kind of a pooling of all these transactions? Recently, you know, there's one PMR which is in pending. What we are seeing is when we're having a cluster of Flow clones, when we have one cone running, the throughput is high than compared with the when we add all the four WebSphere clones in the cluster. Again, as I said, it's still PMR is in pending, but is there any pointers where we can look at if the transaction manager causing any problems?
So the problem that you were seeing is that when you had four cluster members, the throughput was slower?
Right.
Is there evidence that the problem is related to the transaction manager?
Well, we having like, you know, in the transaction manager, there's, of course, the data source and the JMS. Giving a benefit of doubt that those resources are okay, is there any way we can see at the WebSphere to give us more pointers or ideas, like, you know, what might be going wrong or why it's taking a while or why the throughput is going down?
Well, I think if I was working that PMR, I would probably ask you to provide traces from an application server that was in the cluster that was performing slowly and a trace from the single application server that was performing better, and then compare the two traces. Off the top of my head, I don't know what factor related to the transaction manager would cause an application to perform more slowly when you're in a cluster.
Individually, as I said, you know, these servers are okay when we, no matter which machine they run, but it's when we put everything together, it's that point the degradation started happening.
Okay. I mean, it could even be related to the EJB workload management that when, I assume it's involving EJBs, right?
Right.
So it could be that, the requests now go through the EJB workload management to find an available server, and that, you know, does add some overhead to the call. It could be that's what's causing the performance to be slower, or, you know, there could be something else in the picture. But I think the best way to figure out what the problem is to get traces from both scenarios and compare the two.
Thank you.
No problem.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, it is star 1. We'll move next to Teresa Bertain with IBM.
Hello. I also have a question about slide 14, the local transaction containment when the shareable connections. We have a long-running issue. I'm almost sure this is it. When we get under a heavy load and also when some longer servlets are running. But the error is a little different than what you're saying. I'm on 5.1, and the error says unable to get a pooled connection from the data source.
Okay.
That sounds like the same thing, basically.
Yeah. Is it like J2CA0045E?
46E, yes.
Okay. It's probably the same problem. I mean, sometimes we'll see, you know, J2CA0045 or 46E messages in the log. Sometimes it'll be connection wait timeout exceptions. But they both indicate that the connection pool is maxed out and that all of the connections in the pool are in use and that a timeout has happened while we wait for a free connection to become available. So
right.
It sounds like it's likely to be the same problem.
I'm so excited about this. So the next question is to set the unshareable connections. Is that in the admin console or something the application programmer has to do?
That's a good question. That's actually in the resource reference configuration, which is part of the deployment descriptor. So typically the application programmer would configure that during the application development. You would need to, if you wanted to change it, you would need to open up the application you know, either in RAD or the AST and change the, it's called the sharing scope in the resource reference, and then redeploy the application with the change.
Okay. Well, I'll ask them to do that then.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And as a final reminder to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. We'll move next to Jose Yosef with J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah, hi. You mentioned about transaction recovery on slide 30, production transaction recovery.
Yes.
What is a tool that you can use to, you know, look into the transaction log?
There actually is not a tool that's available for that. Right now, the transaction logs are basically meant to be readable, not human readable. So, transaction manager read them, but there is no tool that's available right now to view transactions that are in the transaction logs, unfortunately.
So if there is no, you said until the issue is resolved, ensure that no transaction, I mean, route traffic to other servers, but in case where we don't have other servers, what we can do?
Well, I mean, I would say that in general on production, you should have backup servers or other servers in a cluster that are available. But, you know, I guess the call kind of has to be made from a business point of view about how important the in-flight transaction data is to recover. I guess another thing that you could do is just make a backup of the transaction logs and restart the application server to make the applications available again, and then at some later time bring the transaction logs back over and try to reproduce the problem and enable tracing and send the trace to IBM. I guess that's one way that you could do it.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebShare Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, replays of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, David, for presenting today.